booster for your morning. All the news you need to know. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Well, good morning. Happy Friday, TGIF. Welcome to the WABC Early News. I'm Frank Morano.
Hi, Frankie.
Hi, Juliet.
Good morning. I'm Juliet.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I've been better, actually. I'll be honest with you. I've been better. I'm not feeling so hot.
Sorry to hear that.
That's okay, but we're going to be plug through the day. And I just want to let you guys know in just a few minutes, Deb Valentine will be up with What's Trending in New York. That's 3 minutes from now. But first,
This is the Top 5 at 5.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio may want to run for governor, but before he does that, he needs to kind of wrap up a couple loose ends from his tenure as mayor, which is winding down very soon, thank God. The city's Department of Investigation on Thursday issued a scathing report. It accuses the mayor of treating his security detail basically like a personal concierge service, driving around his adult children, you know, just generally taking advantage of the men and women charged with protecting him. The report also blasts de Blasio for failing to reimburse more than $300,000 spent on his unsuccessful bid for president back in 2019 with regard to his security detail and being out of the country and so forth. Meantime, the NYPD inspector in charge of the detail reportedly tried to pull some funny business by obstructing the investigation. So that should be interesting. De Blasio says, not my fault. The NYPD decides what constitutes executive protection for me, not myself. Listen.
There was a lot of concern. He was a very prominent individual.
The House is scheduling a vote next week to extend the debt limit. In a statement, Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said the chamber will interrupt a scheduled recess and take up the bill on Tuesday. The Senate was able to pass the bill Thursday that extends the debt limit into December.
18 NBA players are in big trouble with the feds. The group, including ex-Net Terrence Williams, reportedly busted in an insurance scam, but officials say the scheme was undone thanks to sloppy grammar on some of the shady documents that they came up with. The indictment charges Williams as the ringleader. Pals include six-time all-defensive team member Tony Allen and his wife Desiree, among others. They're charged with health care fraud and aggravated identity theft.
Tesla is moving its headquarters to the Lone Star State. CEO Elon Musk said at the company's annual shareholder meeting they'll be moving from Palo Alto, California, to Austin, Texas. The move is in response to the rising cost of living in the Bay Area.
President Biden in Chicago yesterday stumping for his push to mandate vaccines for private businesses. The White House at the same time releasing a report suggesting the vaccine mandate has saved lives as evidenced by a rise in vaccination rates.
I'm calling on more employers to act. My message is require your employees to get vaccinated. With vaccinations, we're going to beat this pandemic finally.
Those are your top five at five. Coming up in this half hour, we've got Matt in with sports, and we've got your history hit at 5:20. I'm going to tell you about Nestor's Cup, if you've ever heard of that. But first, let's head over to Deb for some of the big stories in our area. Good morning, Deb.
What's trending?
All right. Good morning. I'm Deborah Valentine. Happy Friday, everybody. So that new 47-page report Juliet was talking about, finding that New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio allegedly misused his NYPD security detail for personal and political purposes, indicating that he took his son Dante to college during his failed presidential bid and that security was used as well for his daughter Kiara. Now, these allegations have been denied by the mayor in the past. They first surfaced in 2019. Now, this report also claims that the NYPD official in charge of the mayor's detail, Inspector Howard Redman, quote, actively obstructed and sought to thwart this investigation, unquote. De Blasio, during his briefing yesterday after this whole report surfaced yesterday morning, was asked if he'll fire Redman. And then he turned to Deputy Intelligence Commissioner John Miller, who said, this report will be looked into.
Very strangely, DOI did not do that. They did not turn to the security experts, even though I made abundantly clear who I turned to for guidance. DOI chose not to ask the very people who were in charge why decisions were made, why things were done to protect me, my family, and others they protect.
And now the mayor says the NYPD was in charge of his security and not him. 18 former NBA players, one other indicted for allegedly defrauding the NBA's health insurance benefit program to the tune of $4 million. These indictments announced yesterday by Audrey Strauss. She is a U.S. attorney out of the Southern District of New York.
We announced charges against 19 individuals for conspiring to defraud a health care plan that provides benefits to active and former National Basketball Association players.
And the alleged ringleader here, Terrence Williams, formerly of the New Jersey Nets, who allegedly pocketed over $200,000 in this scheme. A violent and deadly day in the Bronx, two shootings and a stabbing. A 16-year-old student stabbed an 18-year-old right inside of the library of Fannie Lou Jommer Freedom High School. The injured student taken to a hospital in serious but stable condition. The 16-year-old fled. A 42-year-old man shot and killed right outside the Bronx Terminal Market. A 13-year-old also shot on a basketball court in Hunts Point. So far, no arrests in either one of these. At the high school, the Department of Education said they will increase security today. The NYPD will also have an active presence there. Back to Juliet and Frank.
Thank you very much, ma'am. It is time now for your weather forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Today, we're looking at a mix of clouds and sun in the morning. Unfortunately, it looks like the clouds are going to get a bit heavier this afternoon. We'll have a high of about 74 degrees. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, maybe a rain shower, depending on where you live. We'll have a low of 60 degrees, but it's one of those nights that you may not want to have your windows open because it's going to be very, very humid, kind of sticky outside. Tomorrow, we're looking at cloudy skies, slight chance of a rain shower with a high of 67. Saturday night, cloudy, occasional showers, low of 62, more showers on Sunday, and unfortunately, it's just going to look like that for the next couple of days into Monday. Tuesday looks like the first day that we're going to get back into the 70s, and we'll have maybe some sun peeking out there. So today looks like your last day of sun, although it's probably not going to be very sunny as the day goes on, unfortunately. We're going to get just going to be kind of a chilly, wet next few days and a wet weekend for sure, unfortunately.
But not guaranteed rain tomorrow, right? Not guaranteed.
Let's see. For Saturday, let's see. The 24% chance of rain, so it's a slight chance of a rain shower. It looks like it's just going to be pretty cloudy. I don't see any sun on the forecast, but you never know. But it definitely looks like starting tomorrow night, we're going to have some rain showers kicking in.
5:07, let's get a look at traffic and transit with Joe Nolan. Hello, Joe.
What's trending?
What's trending around the nation. As expected, Pfizer on Thursday asked the FDA for emergency use authorization for their COVID vaccine for kids between the ages of 5 and 11. If the agency agrees, it would be the first vaccine for younger children. Right now, the Pfizer jab is approved for people age 16 and older. And we have emergency use authorization, an EUA, for kids between 12 and 15. Last month, the company released findings showing their shot was safe and created a robust antibody response in young kids, even with that smaller dose. And another update on Brian Laundrie, his dad reportedly trying to cooperate with authorities. Chris Laundrie joined law enforcement officials Thursday, taking them to a trail that his son was familiar with inside a Florida nature preserve. Dad spent about 3.5 hours or so with police there before he headed home. Brian Laundrie, in his third week as a fugitive, wanted for debit card fraud. And, oh, yes, he's a person of interest in his dead girlfriend's murder.
Here's what's trending around the world. The British government said yesterday that it is to relax travel rules further next week, a move that will open up many long-distance holiday destinations to travelers for the first time since the onset of the coronavirus pandemic a year and a half ago. And a former Australian prime minister has accused China of being a bully and expressed enthusiastic support for Taiwan while visiting the democratically ruled island. Former Prime Minister Abbott says that China's government is not something that should be taken lightly, and they've been seeking to isolate Taiwan, which it claims as its own territory. And then finally, Jordan's foreign minister yesterday pushed back against a report that the country's monarch, King Abdullah II, went out of his way to hide the purchase of more than a dozen luxury homes worth more than $106 million, saying there was nothing secretive about the transactions.
And in entertainment, Adele is making history. She's making news. She just dropped a new song. She's got a new waistline, a hot new romance going, and she just made history as the first celebrity ever to make the covers of both British and U.S. Vogue at the same time. You can check her out on the cover, looking absolutely stunning in a Vivienne Westwood gown. Thanks to her 100-pound weight loss, man, she looks good. She says she is obsessed with exercise. It helps calm her anxiety. And things just seem to happen at the Watergate Hotel, the infamous place, the site of a bar brawl between actor Woody Harrelson and another patron. Police say the star was having drinks with his daughter at the hotel's gorgeous rooftop bar, which is absolutely beautiful. It overlooks the Potomac River. Really nice. When a guy wouldn't stop taking pictures of them, so Harrelson goes over to him, says, you know, can you delete these shots, please? And the guy took a swing at him. No word yet on charges. And those are your headlines around the world. It is now, Frank, you want to tease your Frankly Politics?
I do. I'm going to tell you which mayoral candidate got $700,000 in taxpayer money yesterday and which mayoral candidate got zero. The answer may surprise you. But here's what's happening in the rest of the news world. The Southern California oil leak might not be as big as feared. Coast Guard officials say it might be less than 30,000 gallons. That's still a big spill, but much smaller than a recent estimate of 144,000 gallons. Yesterday afternoon, Orange County Supervisor Lisa Bartlett said that lower figure seems like a better reflection of what they're seeing. While some wildlife has been killed, the numbers aren't as large as first feared. A U.S. Coast Guard official said the spill might be as small as 25,000 gallons. And President Biden is strengthening protections for national monuments that the Trump administration rolled back. A White House fact sheet shows protections will be restored for Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante in Utah. Protections are also returning to the Northeast Canyon and Seamounts Marine National Monument off the coast of New England, which former President Trump allowed commercial fishing on last year. Bear's Ears size was reduced by roughly 85%, while Grand Staircase shrunk by nearly half. The White House told The Hill Biden is fulfilling a key promise with the move. And we'll have sports with Matt Sapienza in just a minute, but an autographed picture of shoeless Joe Jackson is the most valuable autographed sports picture ever sold. The photograph, which was taken in 1911 by Frank W. Smith, sold for $1.47 million at the Extra Innings auction in New York. Christie's and Hunt Auctions offered the photo at the auction that also included a Babe Ruth bat, a postcard signed by Lou Gehrig, and an autographed letter signed by Joe DiMaggio to Marilyn Monroe. And finally, before we get to sports, new numbers are out on January's Capitol attack. The U.S. Attorney's Office says about 650 arrests have been made so far in nearly every state. At least 190 of those were charged with assault and 60 with using a deadly weapon. The riot left 140 officers injured and caused more than $1 million worth of damage. The House committee investigating what happened that day just issued more subpoenas this week for testimony and records. That's what's happening.
It is 5:15. Let's head over to Matt Sapienza at the sports desk. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Juliet, and good morning, everybody. Here's what's going on in the wide world of sports. Well, Randy Arozarena became the first player to hit a home run and steal home in a postseason game, and rookie Shane McClanahan pitched the Tampa Bay Rays to a 5-0 victory over the Boston Red Sox in their AL Division Series opener last night. The breakout star of the October last year, Arozarena made a breathtaking dash to the plate in the seventh inning for the first straight steal of home in the postseason since Jackie Robinson did it for the Brooklyn Dodgers against Yogi Berra and the Yankees in the 1955 World Series. Nelson Cruz also homered, and McClanahan tossed five stellar innings for the Rays. Also, the Houston Astros sure do love October. Lance McCullers Jr. was terrific. Yordan Alvarez delivered, and Jose Altuve scored in a nifty slide. McCullers pitched a scoreless ball into the seventh inning, and the Astros beat Lance Lynn and the Chicago White Sox 6-1 in Game 1 of their AL Division Series last night. Michael Brantley added two hits and two RBIs, and as the AL West champions showed off their playoff experience in an impressive opening performance. McCullers had allowed four hits in 6 2/3 innings in his eighth career postseason start. While Houston is in the playoffs for the fifth straight season, winning the World Series in 2017 and making it to the AL Championship Series last year, Chicago is making a second straight playoff appearance for the first time in franchise history. It lost to Oakland in the first round of 2020. Game 2 of the best-of-five series is Friday in Houston. That's your sports at 15 and 45. I'm Matt Sapienza, and that's WABC Sports. Back to you guys.
Thank you very much, Matt. It is 5:17. Let's head over to Traffic on the 7s with Joe Nolan. Hi, Joe.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Thank you very much, Nestor. It's time to go back in time.
And now, it's Huddy's History Hit.
Archaeologists analyzing the cremated remains from a necropolis near Ischia, which is a beautiful island off of Italy. It's actually a really nice place. They've made a fascinating discovery, a 2,800-year-old tomb that was thought to have contained one person is actually the final resting place of three people, as well as some animals. This was the newest discovery. A cup found inside the tomb has an inscription also that mentions it's the cup of Nestor, who was written about by Homer. The words are actually thought to be among the oldest documents showing Greek script. Homer was, of course, the man thought to have written the Iliad and the Odyssey, which really are the two works that kind of, I guess you could say, formed the foundation of ancient Greek literature and still have definitely an impact on Western literature today. And that's your history hit, Frank.
Love it. Let me tell you what's happening in the present day. The two environmental factors may increase the risk of heart failure in women. That's according to a new study published in the Journal of the American Heart Association. It says lengthened exposure to road noise and common air pollutants seem to impact the heart's ability to pump blood. Researchers say women experiencing high levels of exposure had better chances of developing heart failure.
Interesting. In New York, disgraced NYPD Sergeant's Union boss Ed Mullins filed for retirement earlier this week, just hours after stepping down from his post after being accused of misusing the union's cash. The FBI raided his office and home on Tuesday, reportedly looking into evidence of mail and wire fraud, along with the theft of union funds.
The nation's second largest bank is planning to increase its minimum wage to nearly three times the federal amount. Bank of America announced it will now pay its U.S. employees at least $21 an hour, the next step in a multi-year plan to increase pay across the company. In May, the company said they would raise their minimum wage to $25 by the year 2025. Bank of America has continued to raise their minimum wage over the last few years.
Are you on TikTok?
I'm not.
I actually joined it a while ago. It's entertaining, but then it's like it's entertaining for about a week, and then you're kind of like, okay, I'm an adult. I really don't need to look at this constantly. But there is a TikTok trend to warn you about. This isn't just a prank. I mean, it's assault. Kids are being encouraged to rip toilets from their stalls, steal random classroom items. That's pretty bad. But also on TikTok, there is this trend where it's called slap a teacher. And it's happening. A teacher in South Carolina was hit from behind. Another was smacked right in the kisser in Springfield, Missouri. Connecticut Attorney General William Tong urging the social media giant to make reforms so this kind of stuff does not continue. But here's the thing. TikTok claims that they are committed to aggressively removing this type of content. So I guess they're remiss in getting to it in time, apparently.
Clearly. A new study shows concealed handgun permits surged during last year's pandemic. According to a study conducted by the Crime Prevention Research Center, the number of permits rose to over 21 million in 2020. That's an almost 50% increase since 2016. This is also an over 10% increase from the same time last year. In 15 states, more than 10% of adults have permits, with the highest being 32% in, care to guess which state, Juliet?
I'm going to say Texas.
Close. Alabama.
Oh, okay. Well, speaking of crime, three 11-year-olds busted for allegedly plotting to burn down their Fort Myers, Florida school and everyone in it, especially the rude people. That's their quote. The preteens were arrested Monday after another student overheard them talking about the plan. Another classmate told investigators that one of the plotters threatened to light her on fire if she told school staff about the scheme. The suspect's now facing charges of conspiring to commit a first-degree felony. Mm. How nice.
Well, Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, is actually turning 80 years old today. The civil rights icon and founder of the Rainbow Push Coalition has spent the last 60 years of his life advocating for social justice. He was born in Greenville, South Carolina in 1941, attended the University of Illinois, and Jackson, of course, was a candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1984 and 1988, and was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Clinton in the year 2000.
Well, another controversial figure, Bernie Sanders, getting a lot of heat from his own side, the Dems, for refusing to sign a letter condemning those left-wing activists who followed Kristen Sinema into the bathroom. I mean, that video was just galling to me. Senator Cory Booker, of course, of New Jersey, he actually organized a joint statement on behalf of the Democrats calling the protest, quote, plainly inappropriate. But Sanders didn't want to sign, allegedly because it wouldn't include a rebuff or a rebuff of some of Sinema's political views. So he wanted to kind of, chide Sinema in this statement and some of her positions. But Booker wasn't going for that. So he just said he's not going to jump on board and he's not going to sign the letter. Bernie Sanders did.
A Florida man is pleading guilty in federal court to threatening to kill the lawyer who defended the former Minneapolis police officer who killed George Floyd. William Hartnett of Coral Gables, Florida, made threats in a phone call last April when former officer Derek Chauvin was on trial for Floyd's murder. Chauvin was, of course, convicted of third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter in Floyd's death. A viral video showed Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes.
Microsoft is revealing that Russia was behind 58% of all state-sponsored hacking in the last year. Again, this is according to Microsoft. The country's, Russia's biggest targets included U.S. government agencies and think tanks, as well as Ukraine, Britain, and European NATO members. China, however, only did, according to Microsoft, about 10% of the hacks, but they were successful 44% of the time.
Well, both you and Deb covered the Department of Investigation report into Bill de Blasio. Democratic New York City mayoral candidate Eric Adams is defending Mayor de Blasio and his alleged misuse of his police protection. The Brooklyn Borough president, who's a former police officer himself, says if the mayor's wife and children have credible threats against them, the police should do everything to protect them. The DOI released a report yesterday saying Mayor de Blasio abused his security detail, used the force to drive his children around, do errands for him, and follow the mayor on his failed presidential campaign in 2019. Adams argues the mayor has every right to police protection for his family. His Republican rival, however, Curtis Sliwa, says it's clear the mayor abused his security. Sliwa says the mayor should not be able to use the detail as a personal escort family, a personal escort for his family.
Well, I was under the impression from what I read that the kids had decided that they didn't want security after they turned 18. So I guess I'm confused as to why then they were sort of picking and choosing when they would take security, bring Dante up to Yale.
All right. And contrary to what Eric Adams was saying, according to the DOI report, and the commissioner was appointed by de Blasio, the commissioner's report says that there was never a threat assessment done showing that there was any sort of credible threat against the mayor or his family when any of these incidents took place.
Well, I think that, to me, the most galling thing really is the $300,000 that was spent using these people on his failed presidential bid.
Well, I mean, it also looks pretty bad, quite frankly, when you have the NYPD police van moving Kiara when she moved her stuff from the Brooklyn apartment when she moved into Gracie Mansion. Essentially, the NYPD was acting as a moving service.
Yeah, that's you become close, I'm sure, with some of these people. I mean, you're around them all the time. So sometimes you have to just look at things in context. But the fact is, this just seems a little, it seems like it was happening a lot. Anyway, that's for the Attorney General, I guess, to figure out.
What's trending?
All right. Good morning, everybody. In New Jersey, Vice President Kamala Harris is planning to visit the Garden State today. The VP expected to visit both Montclair and Newark, New Jersey. Harris plans to talk about President Biden's child care proposal. She is also expected to encourage folks to get their COVID-19 vaccines if they haven't done so already. Former New Jersey Net Terrence Williams was allegedly heading a group of 19 former NBA players, actually, and one of their wives who allegedly defrauded the NBA's health insurance benefit program to the tune of $4 million. All this announced by Audrey Strauss yesterday. She's the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. She said this during the presser.
One former player, Terrence Williams, was the scheme's linchpin. He provided the other former players with false invoices for medical and dental procedures that they never received.
Now, in one instance, Strauss said an ex-player was playing basketball in Taiwan when he was supposedly getting $48,000 worth of root canals and crowns and 8 teeth at a Beverly Hills, California dental office back in December 2018. Well, a New Jersey school district is investigating a claim in which a mother says that a teacher allegedly pulled off a second grader's hijab right in front of class on Wednesday. This girl's mother is from Maplewood now. In an emailed statement from the school district to parents yesterday, the South Orange Maplewood School District said it was made aware of these allegations and began an investigation, adding that social media is not a reliable forum for due process. And there are some big policy changes for police departments in New Jersey that can no longer consider the number of arrests made or citations issued as criteria for an officer's performance for promotion. Now, that's under a new law signed by New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy yesterday. The governor signed the new law some 3 months after it was sent to his desk by the state legislature. Murphy, of course, up for re-election this year, and he had no comment on this. All right, Juliet and Frank will be back right after this.
WABC. Real. Real. New York. Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Welcome back, everybody. WABC News Times 5:32. Coming up in your Jet Set Juliet travel update, Time Out Magazine has released its list of the world's coolest neighborhoods, and one of our neighborhoods is actually in the top 10. I'll tell you about that, but first, it's your top 5 at 5:30. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio wants to run for governor, but he's got to wrap up a couple loose ends from his tenure as mayor, which is winding down very soon. The city's Department of Investigation on Thursday issued a scathing report accusing him of treating his security detail like a personal concierge service, driving around his adult children, helping them move, just generally taking advantage of the men and women charged with protecting him. De Blasio says it's not his fault. It's the NYPD. They're the one who decides what constitutes executive protection, not him.
Abortion providers are back in business in Texas. The procedure resumed in some areas yesterday after a court blocked the new law, declaring it unconstitutional. For a month now, women had been traveling to other states to end their pregnancy after 6 weeks.
President Biden in Chicago yesterday stumping for his mandate to push vaccines for private businesses, vaccine mandates for private businesses. The White House at the same time releasing a report suggesting the vaccine mandate has saved lives as evidenced by a rise in vaccination rates. Listen.
I'm calling on more employers to act. My message is require your employees to get vaccinated. With vaccinations, we're going to beat this pandemic finally.
Congress is a step closer to saving the nation from a new recession. The House will vote on a bill Tuesday to extend the debt limit another 2 months, and then President Biden can sign it. This was all made possible after the Senate agreed yesterday to raise the borrowing limit. Both Senator Elizabeth Warren and President Donald Trump seem to agree on one thing, which is that Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell caved.
I wonder if they were a Biden fan or a Trump fan. This is an interesting one. President Biden, while he was in Chicago yesterday, admitted that he personally called a nurse's desk at a hospital in Pennsylvania to try to get his friend's partner into the ER because it was overwhelmed with COVID patients. Biden said that his friend's significant other had fallen ill, had difficulty breathing and a high fever. He said that his friend called him after he'd rushed the partner to the hospital. where she couldn't be seen because things were so crowded and so backed up. And Biden said that he called the desk. He talked to the nurse to ask what the situation was. He said he wasn't complaining. He did not say whether or not his friend got in. And that's that. So I guess it pays to have friends in high places. And those are your top five at 5:30.
And now, Frankly Politics.
Eric Adams, the Brooklyn Borough President and Democratic nominee for mayor, took the unusual step yesterday in declining the latest round of public matching funds from the city campaign finance board. His Republican opponent, Curtis Lewa, though, meantime, secured nearly $700,000 in public matching funds as the race enters its final stretch. Adams's decision comes as he continues to outperform Sliwa by millions of dollars on the campaign. Sliwa, the founder of the Guardian Angels, has roughly $4 million since entering the race. Adams has amassed a $19 million war chest and appears to continue building his coffers. Evan Thies, who's a senior advisor and campaign spokesperson for Adams, said Eric's fundraising has been extremely successful. There's no reason to spend taxpayer money for the campaign. Instead self-fund.
Oh, I think that's great. Good.
Well, a lot of people are also questioning if Jumaane Williams, who was the big winner yesterday, if he really needs to be the recipient of $900,000 in public matching funds when neither of his two general election opponents have really have qualified for matching funds yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see these politicians not taking advantage of the taxpayers since we're throwing so much money into taxes. Period. So I think that's good for Eric Adams for not doing that. You know, he's got a massive war chest, as you said. So why should he? Why should he take our money?
Biz Buzz.
Well, we'll see what happens on Wall Street today. Yesterday, it was certainly an interesting day. The market continuing to rebound after a deal was reached in the Senate to extend the debt limit. So this deal will avoid a debt default. And meantime, stocks connected to the reopening of the country had strong days. General Motors gained almost 5%, while Costco shares jumped by almost 1% after reporting better-than-expected sales from last month. So at the closing bell, the Dow was up 337 points, the S&P 500 up 36 points, and the NASDAQ jumped up 152 points. Weekly jobless numbers are way down. The Labor Department reports 326,000 Americans filed first-time claims for unemployment benefits last week. And Samsung's third-quarter profit is up 28% over the third quarter of 2020. The South Korean electronics giant posted its highest quarterly profit in 3 years on Friday. And Sam's Club is betting you're going to have a big holiday season. They'll be stocking bigger turkeys, more toy brands, and taller Christmas trees this year. The members-only warehouse club owned by Walmart expects Americans to gather in big numbers for the holidays this year after the pandemic let the air out of last year's holiday season. Sam's Club officials say they're betting on huge gatherings and pent-up demand. Juliet?
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, it's time now for your Jet Set Juliet travel update. I love Time Out magazine. It's really good. They give you a lot of good, trendy information about your cities, and I like that. One of the things I really like is every year they do this coolest neighborhoods thing. And it's just interesting because it shines a spotlight on neighborhoods that sometimes wouldn't get the spotlight. They're sort of the cool places that the locals know about, but when you go visit, you don't actually know about them as a tourist. So here are some of the places. I'm going to give you the top seven. I was going to break this down into a series, but of course it's Friday, so I can't do that. So we're going to go from number seven. It's in Budapest, Hungary. It's District 11, it's called. Pest used to be the spot, but now people are starting to migrate to the greener Buda side of the Danube River. And both offer spectacular views. I mean, it's just when you're on the Danube River and you're looking at either Buda or Pest, it's like mind-blowing. But the Buda side and District 11 is home now to some really clever attractions, including a former bus depot turned bar, a concert hall, and a decommissioned Ukrainian ship. They've really done a good job with coming up with some clever and interesting and unique spaces and places. And they're really turning it into just an absolutely cool area. So that is District 11 in Budapest. Number six, We made it again, finally. Chelsea comes in at number six here in Manhattan. Basically, Manhattan has been ignored over recent years by Time Out. Attention, rightly so, given to the outer boroughs like Astoria and Bed-Stuy and some of those neighborhoods that, again, are not typically places where when you come to New York from, let's say, I don't know, like Paris, you're not typically going to go, I want to stay in Astoria. But these are still cool neighborhoods. But we are back, and the reason is that Chelsea sets trends. How about the new floating park, Little Island? That is the coolest thing. When we went and did our 5K for the Tunnel to Towers, Frank, we were checking that out.
Yeah,
that was really cool. The High Line, City Winery has their new waterfront spot. It's one of the places, Chelsea, is where you actually can feel like you're not on top of people every minute in New York, depending on where you go. Number five, this makes me so happy, so happy. The Station District in Vilnius, Lithuania is so cool that it's hot. These are my people. The area is home to incredible street art and sculptures. It's Soviet-era factories, kind of exactly what Budapest is doing. They're turning these really kind of ugly places into amazing venues for everything from fashion shows to movie screenings, you know, to food halls and stuff like that. Speaking of, the food scene is really out there. It's totally unique, definitely to the American palate there in Vilnius, in the Station District. They have everything from Georgian cuisine to Uzbek to sushi. So it's definitely a cool up-and-coming place. Station District in Vilnius, Lithuania. Number four is Leith in Edinburgh. So this Edinburgh is such a cool place. It's breathtakingly beautiful. But Leith is really cool because, you know, Edinburgh is really the epitome of historic. I mean, you've got Edinburgh Castle, Mary Queen of Scots, all of that stuff. But Leith, which is on the northwest, northern part of the city, stands out because it's got this gorgeous waterfront promenade and beautiful little row houses that are filled with They're actually residential homes, but also boutiques and restaurants and pubs. And it's just so unique and so different. It almost kind of feels like you're in the Netherlands or maybe Norway or something. And it's up there close to the Scottish Highlands. So you can take some cool day trips. So Leith in Edinburgh, great place. Also, number three on the list is an historic and eccentric and unpretentious neighborhood in Seoul, South Korea. It's called, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Jongo 3 Ga, like actually the number three. And it's got everything from palaces to art galleries, so you've got a lot of history. This is a place where you probably would see tourists. But the thing that stands out about this area is how, even amid being super cool and super trendy, it still reveres its tradition. You'll see the old men playing their games in the parks, you know, with everything else going on around them. So you've got this really cool mix of old and new, traditional and modern. You've got bustling street food carts and food stalls, and also a vibrant gay scene there. So it's got lots of nightclubs and fun bars and things like that. Number two on the list is another American city, Andersonville in Chicago. It's home to a robust Swedish community, and you'll see the Swedish flags flying everywhere. But it's really a hot spot for the LGBTQ scene and great restaurants and great nightlife. Chicago just has great restaurants, period. I tell you, I think Chicago rivals New York when it comes to restaurants. It's close to beaches, Andersonville is, and they are laser focused on the environment, making the world a better place, with a program that's said to be a national and even international model for eco-friendly composting. So it's just, you know, that kind of gives you the idea of sort of what this area is like. And number one, world's coolest neighborhood, according to Time Out magazine, is Norrebro, Copenhagen. Norrebro, I think. I don't know how to pronounce it. Norrebro, I guess it is. Copenhagen comes on top of lists nonstop these days. I mean, I think the world's best restaurant is in Copenhagen as well. This Norrebro area is filled with historic landmarks. It's got ultra-modern architecture and a unique array of gourmet cuisine with a focus on local seasonal produce. It's also really arty. It's really colorful and apparently has a great live music scene, which is killer, and that is very important to me, and also really great flea markets. And that is your Jet Set Julia Travel
All right. Today. Well done.
I got to tell you, putting that together yesterday, I was like falling apart.
Oh, I can imagine.
Such a bad headache yesterday.
Well done.
I think I'm good. I'm going to be good, though. Thank you.
5:45, let's get a look at sports with Matt Sapienza.
Thanks, Frank, and good morning, everyone. Here's what's going on in the wide world of sports. Randy Arozarena, that's a name, became the first player to hit a home run and steal home in a postseason game, and rookie Shane McClanahan pitched the Tampa Bay Rays to a 5-0 victory over the Boston Red Sox in their AL Division Series opener last night. The breakout star of October of last year, Arozarena made a breathtaking dash to the plate in the seventh inning for the first-rate steal of home in the postseason since Jackie Robinson did it for the Brooklyn Dodgers against Yogi Berra and the New York Yankees in the 1955 World Series. Nelson Cruz also homered, and McClanahan tossed five stellar innings for the Rays. Also, the Houston Astros sure do love October. Lance McCullers Jr. was terrific. Yordan Alvarez was delivering, and Jose Altuve scored on a nifty slide. And McCullers pitched a scoreless ball into the seventh inning, and the Astros beat Lance Lynn and the Chicago White Sox 6-1 in Game 1 of their AL Division Series last night. Michael Brantley added two hits and two RBIs as the AL West champions showed their playoff experience in an impressive opening performance. McCullers allowed four hits in 6 2/3 innings in his eighth career postseason start. While Houston's in the playoffs for the fifth straight season, winning the World Series in 2017 and making it to the AL Championship Series last year, Chicago is making a second straight playoff appearance for the first time in franchise history. Game 2 of the Best of 5 series is Friday in Boston. And that's your 77 seconds worth of sports. I'm Matt Sapienza. Keep it right here every day, 15 and 45, for more sports, and I'll see you right back here on Monday. Have a good weekend, everybody.
I didn't know it had to be 77 seconds. Why does it have to be 77 seconds?
Oh, it doesn't have to be. That's just
that's
me
just
continuing the 77 seconds from news from the
but
overnight.
But was it 77 seconds? Did you time it?
I didn't time it today.
Oh,
usually I do.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
All right. Very, very diligent of you, and a good way to push the brand.
Thank you.
Like
absolutely.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Thank you very much. Welcome back, everybody. WABC News time now, 5:50. Let's get to a quick weather forecast for you from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. We're looking at an okay day today. We're going to get up to about 74 degrees in the city. We'll have a mix of clouds and sun during the morning hours, but it looks like it's going to give way to just simply cloudy skies this afternoon with pretty high humidity. Tonight we're going to drop down to 60, and we will have a slight chance of a shower. Very slight chance, though. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. Tomorrow, Saturday, we're going to get up to a high of about 67 degrees. It looks like it's just going to stay pretty cloudy. Only about a 24% chance of rain. But by Saturday night, it increases, and it looks like cloudy with occasional showers. And those continue on into Sunday. We get to a high of about 67 with a 55% chance of rain. Monday looks like we're also going to have rain. By Tuesday, it looks like things start to clear up. We may see some sun. Currently, the temperature in New York City is a chilly 64 degrees.
So it's going to rain on the parade on Monday, Juliet?
It looks like that.
Oh.
Well, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to be the thunderstorm. So it may just be one of those sprinklings that stop after a little bit. It depends on where the bad weather goes and what direction. But hopefully the parade areas will be able to skip that nasty weather.
All right.
We have a quick update on the Gabby Petito case. Make sure Sid is out of the room.
Sid
is gone. Oh, no.
I'm in here. God, no, not
just,
again.
Turn off his mic. Police on the hunt for Brian Laundrie have reportedly discovered a recently used campsite at the Florida park where he told his parents that he was going to take a hike. Meanwhile, authorities are also investigating several reported sightings of the 23-year-old in North Carolina. And this is just, oh man, this is galling. The teenage gunman who opened fire down in Arlington, Texas at his high school on Wednesday, there is video of him from his family on social media celebrating at home after being released on $75,000 bond, while his victims, including a 15-year-old boy, a classmate, and a 25-year-old teacher, remain in the hospital. The boy reportedly clinging to life. Timothy George Simpkins was being held on $75,000 on three charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, but he walked out of the jail on Thursday. On Wednesday, As you know, he pulled a gun from his backpack, shot a 15-year-old 7 or 8 times. Then he shot the teacher for trying to get involved and trying to break up a fight. And he also grazed a teenage girl before going on the run. He turned himself in. Apparently, he says he was angry about the fight that had just happened, where the 15-year-old repeatedly punched him. His family says that he's been bullied. The other family say, don't talk about your kid being the victim when our son is laying in the hospital on, you know, death's door. And a Nazi death camp guard refuses to speak at his trial. This is the guy who is known as Joseph S. He went on trial Thursday near Berlin. He's 100 years old. He is the oldest person to ever be put on trial for Nazi crimes. In court yesterday, he was reportedly visibly proud when the judge asked him to state his age. He was like, you know, he sat up and he seemed very robust, and he said, why, I will be 101 and, you know, whatever, in 30 days or something like that. But he refused to make any comment or statement, certainly any apology, on the allegations, which include helping execute thousands of prisoners at a concentration camp, either by firing squad or by poisonous gas. And poor Teddy, he just can't seem to ride his horse in peace. Black Lives Matter protesters threw red paint on the famed statue of Teddy Roosevelt outside the city's Natural History Museum earlier this week. Critics have said it's racist because it shows Teddy on a horse, but a black man and a Native American walking beside him. Apparently that is disrespectful to some. The city's promised to move the statue, but so far clearly that hasn't happened, and clearly the man and woman who were seen doing the defacing are not happy about the fact that it hasn't been moved. And let's see, do I have one more? Well, I do have one more. Elton John's husband, David Furnish, has apparently collaborated with none other than Meghan Markle on her animated Netflix series. This is a series called Pearl. It's about a little girl who finds inspiration, a 12-year-old heroine who finds inspiration in influential women from history. And according to David Furnish, Meghan Markle is an amazing leader and she is a fantastic collaborator. And those are your headlines, people.
All right. Well, Sid Rosenberg is here to give us a preview of what's coming up on the Bernie and Sid show this Friday morning.
We got a busy show. You know, we've got a big luncheon coming up, too, today. Chairs Palmateri's restaurant in the theater district. The pre-Columbus Day buffet from 11 to 2. Got all the big leaders, Angelo Vivolo, all these big, groups. The Italian-American groups are going to be there for 3 hours later on this morning, leading up to Monday's big Columbus Day parade, which, of course, I'll be on Channel 7 with Joe Piscopo, Maria Bartiromo, and Dolores coming up on Monday afternoon. That'll be fun.
Four great Italians.
Four great Italians, that's right.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I do have to ask, Sid, what is the impetus for the lone Jewish guy being brought into the Italian?
Well, a lot of people believe Columbus was Jewish.
Not only that, but according to Angelo, he thinks, and he's a big shot in this whole thing, he thinks I've done so much for the Italian-American community that despite the fact that I'm Jewish, I deserve to be on that
Your
television
honorary.
Telecast. That's right. Okay. So I'm not going to argue. I'll take it. Why not? But today on the show, we've got three great guests. Joe Tacopina is going to stop by, defense attorney, of course. Peter Gordio from the show Gravesend with his Friday fitness segment. It's always a very good segment. And Judge Jeanine all stopping by today. It's a really good show on a Friday here on Bernie and Sid. It'll be fun. And I saw your friend yesterday, Juliet. She loves you. I was in Glendale, Queens, getting
Jen.
Botox and filler. That's right.
From Dolce Aesthetics. I do love my Jen.
She loves you, too. And
she's
she was
very
great.
Cool.
She was there for about 2 hours and did a whole bunch of work on me, and she's really, really terrific.
You were
she's
there great. For how long?
Probably about 2 hours.
What?
Yeah, we were hanging out. I mean, she gave me some Botox, gave me some filler, but we talked and had a blast. Had a great time.
She's great. I love her.
She is great. The place is great, and she sent her best, obviously.
Well, wonderful. Thank you, Jim.
And, Sid, you are not watching the Fury-Wilder fight tomorrow.
I couldn't care less. Right. Couldn't care less. And I'm a big boxing guy.
I know. That's why I'm surprised.
HBO for many years. This does nothing for me. To me, it's a circus. I'm so mad at boxing because it's gone so down so much. I hear people talk about MMA and UFC, which I just don't care about. So.
Oh, I can't stand it.
Me either. So no Fury-Wilder for
brutal.
Me.
Brutal.
All right, well, Joe Nolan, are you a boxing fan? Are you ordering?
Oh,
your
I love the old days with boxing. Oh my gosh, the world would stop, you know, when there was a big heavyweight fight.
You know, in my book, I'm going to tell a story about my engagement with Ferdy Pacheco. Not actually engagement, but I was a little child and I had a situation with him. It's very cool.
Situation. Oh, okay.
That sounds weird.
As long as it's very cool.
No. It was wonderful. He and his wife were very cool. They took me out one day. It's a strange story, but it's awesome.
Well, he's a legend, that guy. That's in the book. No doubt.
All right. Well, you guys have a wonderful time. And one more thing. This is actually a news you can use type of one more thing. Frank, if you're not you, but if you in general are constantly dealing with bleeding gums and other oral nightmares, you may want to listen up. Experts say people infected with COVID who have poor oral health are more likely to get seriously sick. And doctors say one tool that is very effective in helping prevent or reduce the severity is mouthwash. So go out and get that mouthwash.
That's certainly good advice. One more thing. An Indian bodybuilder is taking home a unique Guinness World Record. 25-year-old Pratik Vital Mohit is being named the world's shortest competitive bodybuilder at 3 feet 4 inches tall. Mohit was born with unusually short arms and legs and was later diagnosed with a form of dwarfism. The athlete that started training in 2012 said a friend suggested he apply to Guinness to see if he is the shortest bodybuilder on the planet. At least for now, he is.
Oh, nice. Well, up next, Bernie and Sid, as they said, they welcome Judge Jeanine, Joe Tacopina. They've got their Friday Fitness segment. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JetSetJuliet and Frank Morano.
At Morano Vision on Instagram, Frank Morano on Twitter.
And we will see you guys on Monday. Frank, have a wonderful time tonight.
Have a great weekend. Hopefully
have a drink
for
me.
I will, and hopefully I'll see some people at the Italian Festival on Staten Island this weekend.